with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Paul Jones Drug Tuesday out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM. The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour as we get into a bunch of different topics. This is always a fun week, Jared, because each and every day feels like Joe Lunardi comes back with the bracketology to show you what he thinks about what just happened the night before. And it'll really start to get interesting as the week moves along when the bigger conference tournaments get cranked up, get underway. If there's upsets, oh, they're out, they're in, and this and that. So it's all, you know, you're used to seeing it on a Monday morning after the weekend. Now all of a sudden it's Tuesday morning, bam, there it is.
Yeah.
He got up 6:30 in the morning to post that thing. So long
nights.
You think
he has them pre-written, like, okay, if this team loses, this is what I think.
Probably. But, man, you still
got to. Pulls it out of a file.
You still got to get up and do it.
Yeah.
So maybe not. But we'll kind of talk about that. Is Oklahoma in no matter what happens tomorrow? Does the committee, there's one team, and they just happen to be Joe Lunardi's last team in today, as we speak. But does the committee need to put Indiana State in? The story that they would be, just to create some, I mean, sure, they could put TCU or whatever other team from a big conference that went about, you know, 20-11, like Oklahoma, let's say. Would it be better to put in Indiana State just for the eyeballs that it could generate? I don't know. The Sycamores. And then who do you think will be the four number one seeds, at least right now? NFL free agency. It was a wild day yesterday. We'll talk about that. Anybody surprise you that got cut or maybe where they ended up? Or surprise you that franchises didn't do a damn thing? Most notably one with a star on their helmet. Will the quarterback salaries ever stabilize? You see Baker get 3 years, $100 million. And not even really him, you know, Cousins gets paid off of a Achilles at the age that he's at. And they're not even, and they're in the middle of the market. They're not even at the top. So will those things ever stabilize, or what would it take for that to happen? And then do you like this happening before the draft? Would you rather have it draft free agency draft? What's your personal opinion there? And then we'll put a bow on the high school basketball season, start to look ahead to next year. And then some spring sports started, and Cash Mayfield, as everyone expected, has dominated so far in his early work this season. So we could talk about that as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're going to be outside the listening area, you can stay in touch with the show a couple of ways. Log on to KADSAM.com or download the app. The app has it all. Radio, the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News will hit the website tonight at midnight, thepennynews.com. You got Big Elk and Paragon TV on there as well. During the high school sports seasons, you can watch those games right there at your fingertips. And, of course, the podcast. You can find it anywhere podcasts drop. How are you today, Jared?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I've already got up this morning, early this morning. My wife and I put in 2.5 miles on the walking. The goal is, we set a goal of 12 miles a week, and I think we've really kind of bumped that up to 15 miles a week leading into, obviously, the Masters.
Yeah.
So that I can get around.
Right.
The more I read, the more it sounds like it's a
thing.
It is a thing.
You need to get ready for it.
Yes. It is going to be physically taxing, because what you don't realize is how much undulation there really, truly is. You can't tell on TV just how hard it is to slug up the hill on, say, number 9 or number 18. You know, you got obviously going down, then you're going back up. And so we decided that it's probably a good idea to get out there and get a little exercise in before we go.
Do you think the thrill of being there will be more than the exhaustion that you fear? You know what I mean? Just being there, like, I don't care. I'll walk all day.
I would be
care.
Afraid that the adrenaline would wear off about midday, and then you'd feel like you want to die.
See, you would hope, I think, if it was me, you would hope that the adrenaline and the thrill and the excitement would be with you all day, and it wouldn't hit you till you got back to your hotel.
Where I hope that that's the case.
Yeah. But that's cool. I admire that you're getting up and ready for it. We got a trip planned for this summer, just me and the wife, to Cancun, and I keep thinking I need to get this dad bod into shape.
Oh, dear.
But I've been training in other ways for that trip.
That would probably be a good
idea.
It
is all-inclusive.
Yeah,
so.
Here's Harrison. Can you drink and walk at the same time?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe not down the hills. Maybe up them. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's how you should be training.
At 6 in the morning? I don't think so.
But
I'm not on a work day.
Just have a can, fill it full of water.
I got to give you a can.
Or whatever it is.
Take a cup.
A cup, okay. Then to get a cup.
Cup of Dr. Pepper. Sweet tea. I bet sweet tea is good down in Georgia. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, you'd hope it would be. That would and peaches. So.
You know what else I think we're going to do?
What's that?
On the way back, you know what resides in Atlanta?
There's a lot. Kirk Cousins, the Coke factory. What is it?
The College Football Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a fun stop.
I think we're going to.
Good. That would be fun.
I got a cousin that lives down there. I think we're going to go after we drop off Kissling on Thursday. I think we're going to try to go to the College Football Hall of Fame.
That's cool.
So that'd be nice.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I forgot it was down there. So anyway. We may do that. We may have reports from the College Football Hall of Fame as well to talk about.
Should take a bunch of pictures and videos. And
here's the deal.
I really wish
I had a camera, like a good camera, knew how to operate a good camera. I don't know if I want to lug it around. That's the whole problem all day long. But that's the beauty of having practice round tickets is they do allow you a camera. Now, they do not allow you a phone. So you can't.
Well, you could take a. Like a Canon, like a sharpshoot camera. Okay, well, I might know someone who has
one. Don't really know if I wanted to be responsible for it. Oh, that's the whole thing.
I mean, we don't make use of it. We need to make use of it. So if you want to take it, take it.
I'm just...
And I have a little pole. Will they let you with the pole?
Oh, I'm sure.
And you could use that as a walking stick. Like a little mono pole for your camera.
I just don't know if I want to take it.
Okay. Well, if you change your mind,
let me know. What are the odds that I could take a picture that hasn't been taken? By professional photographers at Augusta, I don't think the only reason Alex took that. Yeah, the only reason I'd want a camera is because you see, on the coverage and you see people that go in the pictures where they've got the right out in front of the clubhouse where you get that picture with the flowers that are in the shape of the logo. If we don't have a camera, then I don't know how we'll be able to. Get that picture.
I mean, you need proof you were there.
Oh, I'll have proof. This may not be photographic. I don't know. We need to talk about that. But anyhow, so I'm a little tired. My legs are a little sore.
Well, you keep doing it. You're going to get used to it. So
we had 2 miles last night, and we turned around for 2.5 miles this morning.
Was it chilly this morning?
It was a little bit chilly.
Windy, wasn't it?
It was, our house faces north, so we walked out the front door, and I thought, man, it's nice. And then we turned back to the south, and there was the breeze. But we walked on the golf course, around the cart path on the front nine. We didn't go down 2 and 3. We turned after we went down 1. We turned back to the north because of the wind. Big part of it didn't want to slog down through the wind there.
Yeah,
we went down 4. But yeah, it's like 2.5 miles. So we did already put in a long day.
You.
It's already been a day. I need a nap. All right, so let's put a bow on the high school basketball season. Obviously, the story around here was the Merritt Oilerettes in their 2A girls state championship. First one since 1980, third one in the history of Merritt High School. We talked a bunch about that yesterday and the run that they made. I think, are we getting to the point that, with the success that they've had over the last handful of years, second time in the state tournament, probably should have went last year but didn't quite get it done. And with the depth that you can see on the bench, all the girls that are out there, are we getting to the point with the Oilerettes where this is going to start to be an expectation because the program is on a level, say of a, Hammond girls, you feel like they're going to be there every year. Leedy boys, you feel like they're going to be there every year. Are we getting to that point with the Oilerettes?
Well, two state tournaments the past 3 years, and then almost three out of three. Yeah. We'll call it an upset. Last year they were upset, and then they get in that title this year. The expectation, I think, has risen to the point where they should be contending for state tournaments year in and year out. And I say that based on I've seen the – and I'm big on this – the buy-in of a program. There's a lot. I've seen the junior high level. I've seen, the underclassmen that's on this team. I mean, one of them hit the game winner, the eventual game winner, and was a big part of why they won a state title. So I would say that they're at this level now of – there are teams where, let's face it, Hammond and Hammond girls, they expect to win state every year. LaMega expects to win state every year, ceiling obviously. I don't think Merritt is quite there, but they're on the
way. No, I don't mean win it. I mean get there. Are they expecting to be a state tournament team year in, year out?
Yeah, I was about to say they should expect to get to state tournament. Sure, yes. I mean, there's different levels here is what I was saying. There's levels like Hammond expects to get to state every year and win it. Merritt, I think, is at that point where they're expecting to contend to get to state every year. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And if they keep doing that, it's going to get to that Hammond level of we're here every year. Why are we need to be winning these every year. We need to be playing in this game every year, bringing home something every year. So, I mean, that's where I think they're on their way to because of everything. And I think this title is huge because that just set a standard for those young ladies in this program and those junior high, even younger, that were there and that saw that and they go, okay, that's how it's done. I want that feeling. I want to do that. And so there's going to be a lot more buy-in, a lot more participation, a lot of stuff in the summer and building up to that level. So, yeah, I think they're at that level where they are expected to contend to get to the state tournament every year, sure.
Yeah, I do too. I think that, and you mentioned the young – you see pictures. It's so cool of these teams that it was the boys back then when those girls were youngsters, and all of a sudden you see them, they're like, ah, look at there. The three of them are there. Now they're right there. That's all. And that's part of it. I mean, every coach we talked to throughout those couple of weeks mentioned, the buy-in of the town, the buy-in of the younger ones, but that's what they learn to strive for. That's what they learn as the baseline. It's not, oh my gosh, we're in the state tournaments. Well, yeah, we're here, and now let's go win it. And so, and it takes more than just a couple of years before you get to that level. But I do think that with the way the base that is built out there, and I think the boys with Coach Husband there is going to be that same thing. I mean, there's no reason. Yeah, there was a dip for the boys, but he wasn't the coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, when he's been out there, they've been incredibly successful. Mm-hmm. Starting with Rundle and then all the way through Coach Husband. And now he's back in his first year and he has him in the state tournament. I think that, there's even though it'd been a little bit, they know how – it hadn't been since 1970, like mm-hmm. some other places. So I do think they're starting to build it to that level where – If you look up in the 2A state tournament, especially in the girls' side right now, you go, wait a minute, what happened to Merritt? Why aren't they there?
Right.
So I think that's definitely headed that way. I think there's a couple of teams that are poised to make even another leap next year that were super duper young. That got to a certain level, but I think you see them coming. Obviously, the Cheyenne girls are one of those teams. I think Canute can go in that can go in this bucket as well, because they're still got some youth to them.
Boys?
No, the girls too.
Okay.
I mean, with what, you know, maybe not next year, but the year after, obviously, what's coming. But also, you know, with Destiny and the way Schuster took off this year as younger players. But Cheyenne, and then on the boys' side, I think it's the Hammond boys mm-hmm. are coming. The Canute boys, you don't think about how young they are, but they are. I do think that you're going to see, maybe not turnover. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that these teams are going to overtake, you know, Hammond and Leedy as the preeminent teams on the boys and girls side. But I do think that you're going to start to see some as these young ones progress. They're going to be up in that, joining the ranks of the Hammonds and the Leedys, Merritt, as far as teams that are absolutely in contention to go to the state tournament.
Yeah, I agree with the Hammond boys that you saw the flat what they can do, and I think that's so big for them when they see it when they're battling teams like Duke and Sentinel and teams of that nature, who both, by the way, went to state. That natural progression you think is coming over there, and they've been hungry to get that boys team back to that level of going, and it wasn't that, they're not that far removed from state
2020.
Yeah, but those kids, I mean, that's not long for us, but that's long. That 4 years is a long time for a kid, especially that freshman class, who are what, maybe sixth graders, fifth graders. So I can see them moving up. You mentioned the Canute boys, just by the natural progression of things. They return all five starters. Instead of four sophomores and a junior, you're going to get a senior and four juniors, with a couple other juniors that come off the bench that are that contribute. So there's that. And the Canute girls, the questions I have, you know, you're replacing three starters. They did not have a freshman on this team. Who's that going to be? But Schuster, I really liked, you know, we knew what we were getting with Jackson. She's such a special talent. And even in that loss to Allen, you can start to see, this was pointed out to me by our man Jeremy, that it just started to click. Like, she just started to just stop thinking and start playing. But it was just too late there in the fourth quarter. But got it close. And if that can continue moving into her junior year, that could set up some really special things. And Schuster, just from the beginning of her sophomore campaign to the end, you saw progression. You saw her get more confident in knowing the game and not thinking, like I just said. But the question is, replacing the three starters, who that could be. And there's going to be some freshmen that come in from the eighth grade level that could definitely step in. But the future, I think, is bright overall in this area. We've talked about the Merritt teams and the Canute teams. I think Hammond girls are going to be okay. I think they're going to be fighting for state again. And then Leedy. Let's see what happens with Leedy girls. What do we think about them? You know, missing out on state under Coach Beer's first year back, but I think it's Coach Beer. It's a Coach Beer-led squad. You got to think that they're going to get better and be fighting for state too. So I think next year, it was a successful this year, obviously, with our state participants and a winner, but I think next year could, with the youth that we saw this year, if it all progresses like we think it should, I think we could have a really, maybe have even a more successful year next year with our area teams.
No, I don't think there's any doubt. If you put the over-under at 3, which is what state tournament teams from this season, I would go over easily mm-hmm. between the boys and the girls next season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Now, the teams were quality that got there, obviously. You know, a couple of semifinal teams and a state champion. And one of those semifinal teams took number one down to the wire of the Leedy boys. And then, of course, Hammond, that was maybe the game of the week in Class A and B in that one-point loss to Lomega, who was the eventual state champ. So, yeah, the quality was high. The quantity wasn't as many as we've seen in the past. And, you know, and we're not even talking about, you know, Arapo Butler, who has been kind of a staple there, took a little bit of a step back, but they're loading back up. On the boys' side, especially with some of that youth that's still coming. You know, Eric was way close to getting there. I know
they
lose.
Yeah, built in my mind. Yeah. He was close.
That's right. There's a lot of that. You mentioned Leedy girls who were there a year ago, and they bring almost everybody back, if not everybody back. from a team that got there really young and then this year didn't quite make it. And now next year they'll be poised to do it again. So I would be really surprised as we sit here, you know, 350 days away from the A and B state tournament starting, I would be really surprised if when the dust settles on the small school level around here next year, if there weren't over three teams in the Paragon Network that are in the state tournament. I'll be really surprised if that's not the case, because it does seem like some of the ones that are always there are always there, and then a bunch of the other teams were young and really played well in a lot of ways, just weren't quite ready. And I think that may not be the case next year.
How about teams still in this area but not necessarily in the Paragon Network? What do we think about Sentinel Boys? Do you think they can get back?
I mean, there's no reason to think not to. I mean, they lose, though, some. How old was Granite?
Good question.
See, I mean, I don't ever really see these rosters. You know, with me being on the larger schools, so it's hard. It's hard for me without. I should have looked at them before we did this, to get a total feel of who's back coming up next year. You know, the one place that long streak was snapped this year, and it's hard with what leaves to think maybe this is not the end, but a bigger dip is Fort Cobb.
Yeah, a lot of questions there.
I think there is. I mean, of course, about the time you think that, they're going to have four awesome freshmen, and you know, it's going to be like, oh, well, there they are. But it does seem like that one.
And then even those,
and it, you know, it's hard to stay at that level anyway in a school that small. But that could be one that dips a little bit. Mark from Duke, he said Duke will be down.
You know, there's a question of the ceiling girls with everything that they lose. Mm-hmm. What will they look like next year? I got to see it to believe it that they're going to be down. But I got, you know, but there is going to be that question. So there are those questions there. I'm trying to think of any other area teams that we're missing.
Well, I would say that, you know, as far as local interest, I'd say Calumet's going to be dang good again.
Oh yeah.
On the boys' side, they lose a couple of guys, but they had a bulk of their team was underclassmen. And then Hunter will be back, Jacob's son. That'll be a team that's looked at as a favorite to win Class B. On the boys' side,
a couple teams we haven't mentioned. Arapahoe teams.
Mm-hmm.
I think boys and girls, the Arapahoe boys. I mean, they came and upset Canute in the district championship game. A lot of depth, a lot of youth. Coach Rogers was going to get them there. You can see it there. And the girls, too, took Canute down to the wire in the area tournament. Regional tournament. And lost by a point. Almost ending Canute's season. They too, have a lot of upside to them. Not Arapahoe is... They would consider this a down year for them, but it's not a lot of years they're quote unquote down, and they're not going to be down next year. They will be back.
Yep, it's going to be fun. And then, the bigger school level, obviously, you know, Weatherford loses Rearman, but that's it. It's in the starting lineup. So, this next one is going to be kind of their last, maybe not their last hurrah, but at least it will be with the two Sages and CJ. Fueled by a couple of tough close losses in the title game back to back years, I'm sure that's a team that, you know, that's a state championship or bust type scenario for Weatherford next year on the boys' side. It just is, you know, with what they bring back, how close they've been, and maybe even kind of what some other teams lose, it might help them out as well. You know,
or
just,
gain. I mean, with the transfer thing, that's where the thing I'm
you don't
concerned
know.
Concerned about with what Douglas is going to gain in this transfer portal. What? How many basketball players in the city are going to look at Douglas? And go. That's where I want to go.
Yeah.
And they go there.
Yeah, we'll see. But Weatherford will be. I would guess preseason number one again. Mm-hmm. With what and maybe rightfully so because of what they bring back. We'll have to see what everybody else ends up having. But that'll definitely be a team that
they're contenders. 100%.
That'll be a contender. There's no doubt about that. And then I'm just for me personally, I can't wait to see how much better the Elk City girls can continue to get.
Sure.
You know, they really came on in the second half of the season. all the way to the area tournament, loaded with youth. You know, it was funny because it kind of hit me as I was driving up to Okmulgee, because you think, okay, there's three freshmen or two freshman starters, another freshman that plays a bunch, sophomores, you know, a couple. You know, you think, golly, how are these younger ones going to handle their first area tournament? And then I got to thinking, I'm like, wait a minute. They're not a soul on this team, doesn't matter how old they are, that have been in the area tournament, right? So then it was like, well, and I guess how's anybody and everybody going to handle it? And they did fine for a half, and I think they just kind of got wore down in the second half. But I'm excited to see what they, how they can continue to build under Coach Hamm, and how that experience of last year and gaining the confidence that they all gained throughout the year, how much better than they can do then next year and build on it and build on it, and how close. Because you want to talk about a streak that needs to get snapped.
Yeah.
28 straight years Elk City girls have not been in the state tournament, dating all the way back to 1996. That's one that needs to get snapped, and it needs to get snapped here in a hurry. So we'll see if they'll be able to improve enough to battle that. You know, it's – And, of course, you always look around, like, what's everybody else have?
Right.
You know, and you start to think, okay, well, Bethany's got three of the five starters back, and some of the bench players come back. That's still going to be an incredibly formidable team.
This conference is so dang tough.
And
that's a big part of it, too.
People always kind of, that there's, you know, Tuttle has taken the obvious step back from where they were a couple of years ago. As state champs, and then the runner in semifinal last year, then they got beat in the first round this year. Kingfisher and Weatherford. Kingfisher, it seems like they had a bunch coming. I can't remember exactly. I think Weatherford's got about everybody back too. So there is going to be the conference will stay hard.
Elk Cats have a bunch coming
and
back.
That's it.
That's a thing. They got a bunch coming back, and there are some good things happening this year.
Well,
towards the end of that season.
And what's crazy about it is for them. Those four seniors, there was way more than that, from the year before that played so many minutes. For that team to be able to improve the way they did, with everybody kind of outside of maybe Abby, having a totally different role from what it was the year before, it shouldn't be surprising that it took a little bit to get going. It took a little bit to kind of figure things out, You know, the two freshmen were getting up to the high school level, the speed of it, the strength of it, and Kylie off the bench as well. And then, you know, there was just a lot. And even the older players, the older grade players, didn't have near the role that they had this year and had to step into, and it just took a little bit. So now you've got basically everybody knowing what's expected of them coming back next year. I think this could be a fun year. For the Elkettes.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that with the way that they improved. We're to the spring sports. Let me pull this up. I think he's only thrown twice. So yesterday the Big Elks went up to Bishop McGinnis. District baseball action. And they come away 8-2 win. I know Jay was nervous and worried about this game, which here's the deal. Jay is nervous and worried about every game they play. Just the way it is.
Calm down, Jay.
He's a worry wart.
Calm down, Coach.
But so far, Cash threw last Monday here against Woodward, and then he threw on the road yesterday against Bishop McGinnis. So far, if you look at kind of what he's done in the two games, five innings, he's faced 17 batters. He's thrown 63 pitches. So five innings, Jared. How many outs are there in five innings?
15.
How many do you think he struck out?
14.
15. All of them. Walk two.
I guess I give batters too much credit.
He gave somebody some credit there they didn't deserve. Yeah, 15 strikeouts in five innings of work. Yesterday I saw, the Prep Baseball Report, PBR Oklahoma,
yep,
was there to take in the game. Of course, then they had all the equipment. We saw the picture here a couple of weeks ago about with the scouts that are here. Listen, it's going to be an every Monday occurrence wherever the Elks are at. You're going to see dudes with guns jug guns.
Yeah, be clarify yeah. that.
You're just gonna have that. There's gonna be scouts everywhere. Yesterday he worked from 92 to 94, topped out at 95, which is he's made incremental steps since last year. And so, you know, I think the report was he hit 96 here last time, 95 yesterday, and he's just kind of working his way. But man, if you get a chance to go out, it's just not going to be something you see very often, or maybe even ever again.
It's very rare.
Right here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's absolutely
worth if you don't catch him this season, you might have to buy a plane ticket to Florida or Arizona next spring to watch him play.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the coaching staff at OSU is doing what they can. I'm also afraid that there's not going to be enough you can do.
I hope they're putting up a heck of a NIL deal together. Yeah.
I mean, when you start talking about that level and with the way that he knows how to pitch, yeah, they're orange and black may not be in his future.
Pretty, pretty good.
Big Oaks play again today, 5 o'clock, second game of that district doubleheader with Bishop McGinnis coming to town. And oh, by the way, Big Bryce isn't too bad either. Junior Bryce Mouse. He's about 6'5" or 6". He might even be able to touch 90 every now and again as his own self. Skinny on Sports on the Paul Jones Drug Tuesday coming back next.
Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations, and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. It is a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. And Rodney and the gang at Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main, right here in Elk City. Paul Jones Drug is the oldest compounding pharmacy in Elk City. They also offer free local delivery. You can drive through and pick your stuff up. Curbside testing and vaccinations are there as well. Long-term care unit packaging, they call those the blister packs. 225-2121. Rodney Skinner and the gang at Paul Jones Drug. Care you can trust. What did you make of what you saw yesterday in the NFL with the free agency? For me, I think probably the top story of the day yesterday would have been Saquon Barkley leaving the New York Giants to go within the division to the Philadelphia Eagles. How much does that actually improve them?
I don't know. The last couple years, he's good, but he hasn't been that. I don't know if it's the shelf life showing, or if it's just the product of the team itself that wasn't giving him much of an opportunity. So moving to an offense like Philly, definitely think would help him. But, you know, they're replacing Kelsey on the line there. And there's some other shakeups. I mean, it happens every offseason. But I think it's definitely an improvement as a team. And I haven't broke it down. Does it help his game out exponentially or not? We'll see. He has to stay healthy. That's kind of been another bugaboo about him, was staying healthy for a full season. But I'm sure Philly, they're – more than happy to – they see that as an upgrade over Swift. It has to be. I think that's a clear improvement for Philadelphia. But if it's – I mean, he wasn't blowing anybody away the last couple of seasons in New York. He'd have his flashes, his highlight reels and stuff like that, but the wins weren't there. Does this change of environment, this change of scenery improve him personally? We'll see. But that there are some questions there. I mean, it's still a team. I mean, that football is a team sport, and it very rarely does a person come in. I think Bob Stoops said this last week on an interview. Very rarely does somebody come in and just totally change the game or change a team like basketball would. you know, from one season to the next, you're still going to have those components around you to be good. You know, Jalen Hurts is going to have to be a little better throwing it. I mentioned the line. You're going to have to replace Kelsey, which is a big – I mean, that's a big – he's been so consistent. You know, Lane Johnson's still there, but, you know, you got a question of
how healthy is he
going to be. So there's all of that. But he's on a better team. He's – my question is, does he still have it like he had when he came out of college out of Penn State?
I think he does. I think this helps their offense a ton. My only question for Philly is this the move that makes you that much better? Your offense was still, even with Hurts not at the level that he was the year before, that offense was still pretty good. The problems came on the defensive side. You know, the year they make it to the Super Bowl, you know, they just racked up sack after sack after sack. Then all of a sudden you pay Jalen Hurts $55 million a year, and you start to lose guys. And I think you saw that loss come to fruition on that defensive line and trying to get to the passer. They need somebody to rush the passer. Now, maybe they take care of that in the draft. And they looked at the draft going, you know what? There's nobody at Saquon's level. And there's nobody that would really even, you know, maybe they'll target that part of it in the draft instead, because they liked what they could possibly get there and pay in, you know, less of a price than trying to pick up a running back in the draft to pay nothing, but you got to pay even more to some kind of, you know, somebody on the defensive end type thing. Mm-hmm. To, you know, maybe that's the what they kind of weighed those options and went the running back way. Shockingly enough, I thought yesterday the winners of the whole thing were running backs. We saw running backs actually get paid to a level that I don't think we've seen in a while, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a really good day for a bunch of running backs. Now, a couple of guys that really kind of got screwed, and it looks like Aaron Jones is going to be able – he's going to pick up with the Vikings – but just on a one-year deal. I thought Aaron Jones, just the timing of getting released after a lot of these guys had already signed.
Picked up, yeah.
Joe Mixon also got released last night after a bunch of these guys have already signed for the big money. And the thing about both of those guys, it's really interesting, and it just simply shows you how cold-blooded this thing really is. Is those guys have both been in the same place for 7 years with the team that drafted them, and neither team did either one of those guys any favors with the timing of their release after some of those other guys had already gotten paid. So, do you like Kirk Cousins in Atlanta?
I do like
the idea of it. Seems so good, but can they can they just completely flip the script in one offseason? Because they have been such a run team, and you would think this would signal maybe trying to open it up a little bit. I'm a huge Kyle Pitts guy that I don't think he's ever really gotten a chance to show what he can really do there as the tight end out of Florida from a couple of years ago. A lot of people like Drake London as a wide receiver, and then obviously Bijan, and you know they've proven that they can use the running backs in multiple successful ways. I think on the surface of it, it makes sense, and you would think this would improve Atlanta, not only improve them, maybe even put them as the favorite going into next year in the NFC South alongside probably Tampa Bay.
I'll answer your question with another question. Is he the best quarterback in that division?
Yes. I think you have to say yes.
It felt like Atlanta was maybe a quarterback away from propelling them to be in the top of this division. I'm not going to go
right
out on the limb and saying deep playoff run, but it felt like they were like a quarterback away. You mentioned Pitt. Yeah, absolutely. And they were run heavy, and maybe this opens things up for them. I like it. And sometimes for a quarterback personally, just look at what Baker, he's changed the scenery, finally found a home, and it looks like in Tampa Bay he's having success, had success last year. And sometimes you see that a lot when a quarterback, just a change of scenery, and then this franchise putting their trust in him with the contract they gave him, the 4-year deal. I think it's a win-win. I like the move. I think he, because of how weak that division is, he can come in there and he can make some hay here. I think I like it. I like it a lot.
If he's healthy.
If he's healthy. That's, you know, that's another thing. Everything rides on that. Absolutely.
I mean, how, think about Kirk Cousins. I mean, he was drafted as like an afterthought by the Commanders with RG3 looking to have that thing sewn down for years and years, and RG3 gets hurt, and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this Kirk Cousins isn't bad. Then he gets paid bukus in Minnesota. He's coming off an Achilles from last year, and now he's making 180 mil from Atlanta. Man, he is the poster child for the quarterback market probably being a little out of control. He should not be making 4 years, 180, right?
No.
Kirk Cousins, 45 mil a year. That seems excessive. But he's also proven that when healthy, he's a pretty good player. I think it's fascinating to see now what – I saw they picked up Sam Darnold. But surely that's not Minnesota's quarterback, right?
No, I don't think they're done in that department.
Are they really – really, like, all kidding aside, are the Minnesota Vikings seriously going to draft J.J. McCarthy with the 5th pick? Oh, they don't have it. Wait a minute. I had seen that. They got the 11th pick. Well, that's better.
I would take him with the 11th pick. Not a top 5.
I think I'd seen a trade where they traded up with the like Chargers to 5.
I gotcha.
That's what it was. You would take him with the 11th pick.
I mean, is that the first need off their board? Quarterback, and if he's the best available, where do you go? Yeah, you don't really believe that Sam Darnold's the answer.
No. No, I really thought this would be a possible Justin Fields landing spot.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really hasn't been. Looks like maybe the Raiders might be in the Justin Fields. How about what are the Bears going to do? It doesn't seem like anybody wants Justin Fields.
Which seems wild to me. He seems like a guy, like I just said, if he found a perfect landing spot, he could be really successful because he has all the attributes of being a really good quarterback, and he's shown some really good things. And then I question, well, is he on a well-built team?
Okay, here's the question I would have. Is it that people don't think he's very good, or is it that people know the Bears are screwed and they have zero leverage?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that what's driving down Justin Fields' price? If he was on a different team – in a different situation where they kind of want, I mean, but what's he going to do? Is he going to be the backup for Caleb Williams?
He doesn't want that.
I mean, he doesn't want that. No. Listen, Mark Nation is our resident Bear fan. I promise you that.
It's an interesting idea.
It's an interesting idea that they would keep Fields and let Caleb watch. Could they keep him off the field?
Chicago might implode if you don't play Williams for the full.
Could they
first
keep
year.
Him off the field?
As soon as the road gets rocky, they'll put him in. They would put him in. Maybe they're looking for, maybe they do it. Maybe they do keep him, draft Williams, and then as soon as, you know, start Fields. And you're telling him, you got to be perfect or this guy behind you is going to take your job. As soon as he throws that first pick in preseason, he's benched. But I like the theory of everybody, all other teams are thinking, we're going to lowball you on this one.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to fleece us and have Caleb Williams just so we can have Fields.
Right. And so, okay. I'll ask Mark on our text line. If Chicago wants Fields, do the fans want Fields? What do you want to see happen? Because I was always a Justin Fields guy going into the draft. He's a little rough around the edges,
right. Yeah.
But I liked him.
Yeah.
And once again, a lot of it was due to a playoff game where he just shredded BV and Clemson. In a lot of ways. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I mean, he did in that 2020 season. Now, it was also, of course, the COVID and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, he got a lot of rest that year, too.
But what do you want to do? Do you want to keep Fields, Mark, or what do you want to see happen? As a Bear fan, and I mean a gigantic Bear fan, what do you want to see happen? Here's what he said. It's hard to say. I hope Caleb isn't a total bust, but I have a bad feeling. Isn't that kind of a lot of people's thoughts?
Everybody's thinking it but not saying it out loud, but you're seeing it like written like on tweets and stuff. Everyone is like, oh, I'm hearing this about him. I'm hearing that about him. I got a bad feeling about him. But you're not seeing like the talking heads really proclaim that.
So is that just a bunch of smoke because people are trying to almost talk Chicago out of taking him? What could you get?
I think the risk is greater than the reward when you take him. I think you have to take him.
Yeah.
See what you get. Right? Even if he's a quote-unquote bust in Chicago, there's going to be somebody that's going to give up some picks, some capital, whatever, to get him. Go, whoa, you don't want him? We'll try him out.
The problem for Chicago doesn't really have anything to do with this draft. The problem for Chicago is the ghost of Mitch Trubisky is still haunting the Bears franchise when they could have had Patrick Mahomes. And the ineptitude that is the Bears quarterback management.
Now you're just twisting the knife and Mark here. That's
No. I'm being serious. I'm telling you why they're going to take.
You didn't have to remind him about it.
Well, he knows. He gets reminded daily on our fantasy group. No, but seriously, that's why they're going to take Caleb Williams. I don't necessarily disagree that if you could get, you know, what would the haul be? Is it two firsts? Is it, you know, we've seen these massive trades for this top pick. And Williams, by some people's estimation, is a better prospect than anybody that's ever had the first pick traded for him. So what is that? What is the haul that they could get? I think that's another reason why you see these kind of underlying stories about how he's not, you know, he's got that Bo Callahan in him.
Yeah.
But is it, if three firsts and a player?
A punt returner.
Putty. David Putney?
Yeah, Putney.
Just because I want him? If it's me and you have Fields already with you, and you can get three firsts and a good player for that number one overall pick. And, you know, depending on where you go, depending on who trades for it, is it, you know, do you have to go down to three? Do you go, you know, where do you fall? But let's say you go to three. Let's say New England really wants Caleb Williams. They're not really sold on Drake May. They think Washington's taking Jaden Daniels. So if you slip to three, you still can take Marvin Harrison, if that's what you want to do, to pair with Fields and everybody else. I think you do that all day long, don't you?
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. I mean, if you're trading with the team, you're clearly trading with a team that's not very good either because they need a quarterback, right? But I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're taking Williams, and then this may go all the way up to the draft before we see a Fields trade and maybe even past. But it's just the Bears in a tough spot. You would think they were in a perfect spot having him and the number one pick, you know, all that leverage, but they really don't have any of it because everybody knows they don't want Fields, or everybody thinks they don't want Fields. So it's an interesting spot for them to be in.
It is.
No doubt about it. Yeah, if it seemed like this is going to be great, and it's turned out to just not really being great. Do you like the free agency before the draft?
I kind of do.
I do too.
But honestly, it's six one way, half a dozen the other for me, before or after. But I like it before because it kind of shapes up the draft for you. It gives us about another dozen mock drafts after free agency kind of settles down. But I do. I like it. And it's a bridge between Super Bowl and draft, you know, whether it's combine, then free agency, then draft. You know, the NFL's brilliantly found a way to keep the NFL on people's minds year round.
Oh, yeah. It's 12 months.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that. Hey, you know what today is?
It is the 12th of March.
It's also Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
You know what happens at Boomtown Grill on Tuesday?
No, I don't.
$5 chicken fry and a side. Ooh. Tuesday's special is the $5 chicken fried steak, one side, Boomtown Grill. You know, it's not just the food. They got 11 beers on tap, 30 bottled and canned beers available. There's imports, domestics, large wine selection. And you know what their house favorite drink is?
What's the house favorite?
You've heard of the old fashioned.
Of course. Draper's drink.
Well, they put a little twist to that. The smoked old fashioned.
Hmm.
The classic old fashioned cocktail with the modern seasonal smoky twist. Visit Boomtown, 2103 South Main in Elk City. You can carry out by calling 225-3463. Open 7 days a week, 11 to 10 Sunday through Thursday, and then 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. Appreciate Boomtown Grill hopping on with us. And by the way, your March Madness headquarters will be the Boomtown Grill. What a perfect place. Go down on Thursday morning. We'll tell you what the special is that day on Thursday, but you're going to like it. Watch hoops. Eat chicken wings.
Oh.
Nod. We'll be back.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medication safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed, separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street, Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
If you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back, Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the sports animal. It is a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Rodney and the gang at Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main. Paul Jones Drug is care you can trust. Convenience packaging, Jared. It's where they individually package your daily medication so you do not have to fill your pill caddy. The days of the week, how many pills, all that stuff, they do it for you. All you got to do is open it up and take them. And that's why they call it convenient, because it is convenient for you not to have to load your pill caddy. DME, which is durable medical equipment. It's your walkers, canes, crutches, wraps, etc. Most insurances are accepted. And also, don't forget, coming up on, you know, you got, what, St. Patrick's Day, you got Easter, and then, of course, you've also got graduation coming in the next few months. A great place to shop for little gifts, greeting cards. Paul Jones Drug is care you can trust. Question on the text line, what's worse, taking a number one bust or passing on number one who turns into Mahomes? I would say the latter, because even if you take a bust, a lot of times you figure that out in a year or two or maybe three, and you can try to fix it quicker. Not taking Mahomes ruins you for decades. You know what I mean? Now, but here's a question I would ask to that, though. And I think we see this in the NBA a ton, and we don't think of it in the NFL as much just because there's so many more players. But let's pretend like the Bears would have had the foresight to take Patrick Mahomes that year in the draft. My question to you, Jared, is with the history of the Chicago Bears and the quarterback position, would we be sitting here revering Patrick Mahomes the same way we do now if he would have been a Chicago Bear?
Well, I just said it that...
Is he that good? Is he so good that he could totally reverse the stink that is the Bears quarterback position?
I don't think so, because it's what I said earlier about it being it. Patrick Mahomes, I think, landed at a well built team. Tyreek Hill was there, of course, Kelce, and that's been a marriage made in heaven. Humphreys joining them, was that the next year's draft after him?
Yeah, or a couple.
So I mean, you got to give Kansas City's front office a lot of credit for building around, I mean, getting Mahomes and bringing him in and building around him. I don't know if Chicago would have done that. I don't know. No offense to Chicago's front office. I just, they've had some good, solid quarterbacks. It just hasn't worked out.
There's no way in hell he'd be as good.
Because what I just said.
Well, and you missed the most important guy in the whole thing for Kansas City and Mahomes. Andy Reid.
Well, there's, of course, that. Yeah.
You know, in the culture that Andy Reid is able to establish and the way that he's, you know, we saw him with McNabb, maybe not quite to the level of success, but they were good. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Andy Reid is always going to be perpetually underrated because he coached at the same time as Belichick. But if you start to look at what Reid has done, multiple franchises, multiple conferences, multiple quarterbacks. You know, I think we always wondered, was it Brady or Belichick? And as Brady left, we started to realize it wasn't Belichick. I can't wait to see what happens, if it ever does happen, if we get the answer of was it Reid or Mahomes. See, that question's not even being asked right now, right? Because it's just, oh, it's Mahomes. And maybe that's because Andy didn't win the Super Bowl in Philly. You know, he got there once. He was always in the NFC title game. But he never got all the way over the hump. And so maybe it's viewed as Mahomes being the guy that got pulled Reid over the hump, which that could be the truth. But at the same time, I don't know that there's any guarantee. I think Andy Reid was so important in the development of Patrick Mahomes. And in a lot of ways, I don't think there's any way we're sitting here right now talking about Patrick Mahomes as in starting to be in the GOAT conversation if he would have been drafted by the Bears. I just don't think the Bears have that, the development in place the way that Kansas City did. Maybe they do now, but I don't think they did then. And so, in a lot of ways, Patrick Mahomes ought to thank the Bears for not drafting him.
Oh, yeah.
And being able to go to Kansas City. All right, bracketology question. The only question I've got about bracketology, I know they play tomorrow, but because I've had this one texted me a couple of times since, you know, you kind of see where Oklahoma's at a 9 seed, da-da-da. Do you think OU's in no matter what happens tomorrow?
I do. Just based on what everyone is saying anyways, all the experts are saying anyways, is that the must-win game was the Cincinnati game that they did win, and that solidified their spot. I think the only question is at what seed do they get? Depending on what happens tomorrow, could they drop to around that 10-11 spot? Or if they can make a run here, can they get a little higher? But I think they're in no matter what. I think the real question is you're going to see a fight from TCU because I think they're playing for their tournament lives. So, but I think OU's in no matter what.
I agree. I totally agree.
And I'm really basing that just what I just said. Just the multiple projections I've seen from different websites have them in no matter what.
Yeah, nobody – they're not even down on the last four buys. They're not in the last four in. And so I think one loss wouldn't – here's the truth. You know, a lot of OU fans are like, they just don't look very good. They haven't played – there's not very many good teams. They're in the same boat as a whole bunch of others. All around the country and all the different conferences. There's just not that many good ones. So I was saying that. Who do you think are the four number one seeds going into the conference tournament?
Well, I think the three.
I think three are settled, don't you?
Purdue, UConn, Houston.
Yes.
Yes, and the two that are up for maybe even three more that can take that fourth one is Arizona, but their chances got hurt when they lost to USC. I think final regular season game for them. I think Tennessee's in that conversation, and I think North Carolina's in that conversation.
Yeah, I think those are the three. I don't know if Marquette – all of a sudden you see Creighton vaulting up.
Them kind of – but I think what – so really watch these conference tournaments. If North Carolina goes and wins the ACC, I mean, they have an impressive win after going to Duke and winning over the weekend. if they can win, and they'll probably have to go through Duke again. If they can win the ACC, that might solidify it for them. But watch Tennessee. If they can go and win the SEC and Duke or in North Carolina maybe stumbles a little bit, that could get them the number one seed. And then there's Arizona. I mean, what's going to happen to them? So watch these conference tournaments with those three teams. They could be fighting for a number one seed depending how they finish, if they're hoisting trophies or not.
Yeah, Lenardi's got Tennessee there right now. I would have a hard time believing if Carolina wins the regular season ACC and then goes on and wins the ACC tournament because of Carolina.
Yeah.
I would have a hard time believing that they wouldn't make it and make that be that last one. And, oh, by the way, this probably doesn't factor as much as maybe it would in a football argument, but North Carolina beat Tennessee earlier in the season.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
I forgot about that.
Yeah,
you're
right. They beat them 100-92. So if it did come down to those two, you know, that maybe that's the easy cop-out answer for the committee. And then, oh, by the way, kind of a la OU and Cincinnati back in 2002 when the Hollis Price team got to the Final Four, Cincinnati was the one and OU was the two in that same region. I think, barring Arizona just blowing everybody away, but I think you're right, that USC loss is huge for them to knock them down. And I honestly think out. I think it's those two, maybe Creighton. If Creighton could go through the Big East, beat UConn in the final or what have you, maybe they could do it if these other two slip early in their conference tournaments. But I really think – I think it's going to be – one of them's going to be one and one of them's going to be two, and they're going to be in the same – I think they're going to be in the same region.
But you know who I'm rooting for?
Who?
Coach Ricky Barnes at Tennessee.
Why?
Just like the story.
Do you
Texas
really?
Texas dumped him. Texas has not been as good. Have they been as good since sending him out?
Oh, no.
And look what he's doing now at Tennessee.
Now,
I think it's a cool story.
And also, I mean, yeah, he's doing exactly what he did at Texas. Really good in the regular season and then bowed out early in the tournament.
We'll see.
But
they're better. I mean, Tennessee's been better and Texas has been.
The SEC is definitely better than the ACC. I mean, it's not even close. So maybe that could give the nod if they both win their conference tournaments. The chances of Tennessee beating better teams along the way is really high than what North Carolina is going to be able to beat. But I just go back to the Carolina name. You know, if they went three in a row over Duke, I think that holds a lot more weight than it probably should.
Yep.
And then, of course, you'd have the head-to-head win as well. So I'm starting to sort of get excited about the tournament.
Well, now the real season.
I haven't really even cared about college basketball this entire time. And, oh, by the way, don't look now. It was a month ago when we finally breached the college basketball subject, and we were talking about a team that was on the bubble or even out of the tournament back then that we were both like, boy, this is weird. You remember who that was?
Gonzaga.
Now you look up, they're 17th in the country playing in the West Coast Conference Finals tonight, and obviously in and maybe playing as good a basketball as anybody in the country right now. There they are. Gonzaga and St. Mary's. How many times?
That's why we just should talk about college basketball until this time of the year. Until as soon as high school basketball is done, now we can start talking.
Think about this.
It.
2 months ago, Oklahoma was number 7, and Gonzaga was out of the tournament.
That's
flipped on its head.
That's how it can all change.
How many times have Gonzaga and St. Mary's played in the finals of the West Coast Conference Tournament? It seems like it's every year.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe sprinkle in a San Francisco every now and then, or Santa Clara every now and then. All right, everybody have a great Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow right here on the Skinny on Sports.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.